learning what the Torah. I knew the stories. I knew, you know, David and Goliath. I mean, I knew these stories. It's not unfamiliar to me. So for me, you know, God is God in my mother's mind, in my mother's, my family, the community in Kitchener that I grew up in. God is God, one God. And then there's the idea of the Holy Trinity. There's the Jesus idea. I mean, so I truly believe Greek Orthodoxy sort of gets lumped into the whole nine yards, and it does not. That's by true. Any stretch of the imagination. So no. just I just wanted to.
But Adventists are very, very good and unusual at that. They believe so much in the divinity that, particularly when you're teaching children. Now, have you ever seen in the doctor's offices, there's the Bible story books? They're put out by Seventh-day Adventists. There's the two kinds. They have the Bible story books. They have a beautiful set. They say they're approved by Jews. Watch out. And they also have the Maxwell's bedtime stories. And they sell these sets to people. And they put them in the doctor's office, so you get your bite and you call and you get them. Well, in the stories for children, they very often will equate the two because they want to teach that. And yes, they will. You're right. They will be as overt as actually saying, instead of Hashem, they will say Jesus. That's true, they do. But that's unusual. And I reacted against that because I felt it was inaccurate and it was deceitful.
Okay, I've been impressed by all three marvelous stories. We're picking the guy in the middle. So I'm going to ask you another question.
Yeah.
Although all of us could answer equally in different ways. You mentioned in Richmond you studied with the Rabbi Feigelstock.
Yes.
I think I knew his uncle or father, whatever it may be.
Yes.
Now, it is my impression he's Lubavitch, and if he was Lubavitch, did he impress upon you the importance of Lubavitch or Judaism as a rule?
Let's not go there.
What's that?
Okay. No, he was completely vanilla for me.
Vanilla. And then he may have been, I don't understand.
No, he did not attempt to lay sectarianism on me at all. And that actually, that's very important. I believe that one of the issues that comes up for people is identity. When you talk about conversion, when you talk about what you just asked, there's a question of identity. Do I wear the right style of hat? Has it got a big enough brim? Do I wear my talus after shul in the kiddush? Do I wear it this way? All these things. And how do I, you know, when I'm doing hagba, what do I do? Do I stop, roll it, and then carry? Come on. There's all this stuff, right? And there's trademarks for each thing. Identity, I always reacted against that. And I thought, it's like the Jerry Seinfeld thing with the dentist. You know, I'm not going to say, can I have a shtickle of glue? I mean, that's not my culture, and it's not an essential part of the belief system. I don't have to say that stuff. And I feel that I would be a groupie, a wannabe. It's like when you see somebody. We had one fellow come into our shul, and he had all the uniform. He had the right hat. He had the right talus, he had everything, and he was, you know, he looked to me
standards?
Like he was an FFB Lubavitcher, you know, and he came in, and he can't even read Hebrew, and I said, forget the uniform till you can at least daven, you know, identity is a very key issue, and I want to just be me, be a natural person, and if I don't, like, you know, people can't understand why I would wear this kippah this week, I'd wear leather the next week, I'd wear a velvet the next, that you can't understand, because those things are these uniforms, and I don't buy into it.
Okay.
I don't.
When is your book coming out? I'll buy it.
Yeah.
Number two. If you are wondered, are you married?
you got it.
Because I near the bottom here, one of the questions the Beit Din does ask is, are you dating anyone Jewish?
Yeah.
And I wrote here quite clearly the bottom, as for my personal situation, which I call it, I can assure you that there is no Jewish man or any man in my life, much to my mother's chagrin. But Baruch Hashem, I will hopefully be blessed one day with a union.
Yeah.
My mother is now asking me the following question. Are they at least setting you up with anybody? So, no.
But have you had difficulty dating Orthodox Jewish boys?
There's a good question.
The question. That's a
because
very interesting
some history of people I know.
like I said, there is a stigma attached. Not all religious families will want me in their backyard. They will certainly have me at their Shabbos table. Make no mistake. I mean, you know, I have a story to bring. I can be quite entertaining if I have to be. But I think it'll be a little difficult for me, definitely, in the religious world. I don't necessarily think Toronto is the best place to date in the religious world. And the other thing I do find is that people have good intentions, but they are... I've had the experience of being set up with sort of the guys that everyone else has picked through, because somehow I should be really lucky that they're setting me up at all. And so, you know, if I had less of an ego and confidence, I think I would just say, okay, that's good enough. But you know what? It's not good enough. So I you know, am happy to date. But I also will not just date anybody, because that's the only opportunity that's been handed to me. So just to answer your question. Pardon? I'm selective. I think I have every right to be selective, as I will live with someone for the rest of my life. So, you know.
I want to ask, I don't know your name.
Kim Gardner.
Kim Gardner.
Oh, yeah, Kim.
When I read the thing, Kim Gardner, I thought for sure it was a woman. But the name.
I'm pretty secure in my gender.
No. Just the name, though, the name.
I'm not confused in the least.
Yeah, I know. This is what I want to ask you. How in God's name, I have read the New Testament hundreds of times. I'm really good at
it. What are you
doing
that for?
Anyway, yes. Saul, yet breathing threatened the slaughter against the disciples, went to the high priest, asked for letters, the synagogue, and the master of the
Okay, whoa. Okay, enough.
Okay, right. Okay, now, what I don't understand is, how can they possibly say Jesus is God if he's on a cross and says, my God, why have you forsaken me? How do they get that? It makes no sense. Also, Paul contradicts himself every four lines. Jews are the chosen people of God. They're the enemies of the human race. You can't keep all the commandments, because then you'll become too arrogant. That's why you can't keep the commandments. But then you can't keep them anyways. How would you become arrogant? The man is a nut. How does anyone believe him?
Okay. Good. I'm not going to preach, so please don't. What we have to understand is, how can people embrace something that is essentially nonsensical?
Exactly.
How can they do such a thing?
Wait, and one more. It says, those of you who believe in me may drink any deadly thing and it will not harm you. When missionaries come to my door, I say, I'm going to get the Javits. You drink that, I will become a Christian.
Okay. Enough. Okay. So, there are always elements of our faith which you cannot defend logically. There are elements of Judaism which somebody could say the same thing to you about. So in all fairness, let's just watch it.
Yes.
Okay, good question. So we have to understand how people believe what they believe. And let me answer it this way, in a way that will be assistance to Jews for Judaism. What you have to understand that is what is being offered to people, and what the sale is when they come to your relatives and they try to convert them, when they have an experience, the sale is a mental capitulation to their story, as nonsensical as it may be. But your person will be told it comes from the Old Testament. It is taught also in the New Testament, and that's where we got it from. Nobody I know of has ever gone from the Old Testament to the New Testament and actually come out with a belief like that. It is only because they're told to believe it, and it's a mental capitulation. Because I was good at evangelism, I'm also good at sales. I know when you have bought. I know how to sell you. And all I want to do, if I'm evangelizing you, I would just want to, God forbid I wouldn't evangelize you, but if that were to be my job, all I want to do is get you to mentally capitulate. When anybody mentally capitulates, they go through a moment of temporary insanity. Because mental imbalance, okay? They're going, no, then you've got to go, flip, yes, okay? When you do that, when you change your whole mind, it's a rush, folks! you're going to feel something emotionally, mentally, all sorts of ways. You're going to feel something going off. So when that happens, people think that they had an epiphany. They haven't. All they've done is they've capitulated. And the greater the lie, the greater the feeling of epiphany.
Okay, I have a question for John.
Yeah.
John, I want to know if you can comment for a few minutes on two things. Number one, you've obviously had the opportunity to taste the beauty and the richness of Jewish life, Jewish ritual, Shabbat. And my first question is, being that you have chosen not to be involved as a Jew in Jewish life, can you comment on what your religious observance, your religious lifestyle is all about? And number two, the question is dealing with the obvious loneliness that you must experience in being part of a movement that has seemingly very few members.
Well, very good questions, and I get those quite often. So, it was quite a shock, actually. You know, you're going from Shabbos and all the Yom Tovim to, you know, Bnei Noach, where, you know, typically at Bnei Noach, you know, they don't have to celebrate anything. They don't have to have a celebration of Shabbos. They don't have to pray every day if they don't want to. They don't have to have all the different holidays that, you know, that fall in line that, you know, Bnei Noach can celebrate if they want to, but they're not obligated to do so. They can go to work on Shabbos if they want to. Nonetheless, you know, it wouldn't be much of an existence, you know, basically is what you're saying, if there was no sort of life cycle events. It's very difficult in that way. I'm not going to deny it was extremely difficult not to convert at that period of time in my life in order to leave all the richness of Judaism and its beauty and its wonder for something that had no foundation. It was an extremely difficult decision to do. At times it seemed easier to say, you know, I should just convert. It's so much easier, being of Bnei Noach, which sounds odd, right? That it's so much easier to convert, you think of. But, you know, it's one thing when you decide not to convert and you go back to your family and you just say, you know what, I'm going to turn a blind eye and I'm going to go to, you know, Christmas and I'm going to go to New Year's and I'm going to go to Easter and I'm going to go to all these other things that they do and I'm just going to forget about everything I learned. And you can't. You know, if you're honest to yourself, you just cannot give that up. So you end up living in, you know, I was in solitude for a few years where I didn't celebrate anything with my family that I came from, and I had no place to go to in terms of, yes, I had friends who were Jewish that invited me over for Shabbos and Yom Tov, but yeah, it didn't feel right. You know, I had left it. I wanted to sort of make a clean break, and for 2 years I pretty much lived in solitude. And it's just during that period of time that I spent a lot of time sort of thinking about, well, what could a Bnei Noach do if the situation was right and they had the proper blessing of appropriate rabbis, obviously rabbis that know what they're talking about, and that's how I ended up putting together the quarterly and creating these sort of celebrations that would enable us to have some sort of a tradition, some sort of a life cycle of event. Now, is it enough? No, it's not enough. The point that you brought up is, you know, where's the foundation? I think that for Bnei Noach to survive, and there is a small community, albeit, you know, in Toronto, there's a handful of us. I myself was part of that handful. There's a few other people that are loosely affiliated with it. Throughout the world, I have about 300 people that are on either my mailing list or my the hard copy list for my quarterly that receive it. I don't know how much they observe in terms of the various holidays that they can do or the various prayers that they might be able to say. I don't know how much they do or don't do. I'm not aware. I know they subscribe to it and I oblige by sending it to them. There is no place really to call home for us, and I think for Bnei Noach to survive, and it's really a phenomenon that's existed in the last 10 years. When I first learned about Bnei Noach and I went on the net group, there was maybe 5 people on it's called moderated Noahides at Yahoo. There was about 5 or 6 Bnei Noach on there. There's a couple of hundred at least there now, maybe 300 or 400. I read a book by J. David Davis, who I believe spoke in Toronto once, who was a minister that converted his entire congregation to Bnei Noach at the time. They were Baptists. In his book, he quotes 5 to 10,000 Bnei Noach worldwide. Have I met them all? No. I mean, I've heard of pockets. Now, because of Rabbi Mann being here, there is obviously some in the community in New York that I, or at least they call into his talk show or his shir. I wasn't unaware of that until today. So there are pockets here and there. There are obviously Christians out there that are feeling disassociated with their belief that want something to turn to and want to have a place to call home, and they don't necessarily want to convert. So there has to be something in place for them. You know, Rabbi Shulhut earlier, he was speaking to some individuals after his year, mentioning that he's in the process with some other individuals of putting together a codified law for B'nai Noach, which is great, it is needed. I think, though, for the movement to survive beyond the theoretical concepts of a codified law, there has to be a concrete prayer book that is approved by at least the majority of rabbis, which could be a feat in and of itself. And if they have that prayer book with life cycle events, these are the holidays that you can celebrate, these are how you can celebrate them, these are the life cycle events, you know, birth, coming of age, marriage, death, with that sort of a foundation, with a book that you can grab onto. Believe it or not, I mean, I've gotten emails from people saying, you know, thank God for your quarterly, because I can hold something in my hand that's tangible that did not exist before. And listen, you know, there's nothing in there that I've created myself. I'm no scholar when it comes to that. I simply took other things that were out there and said, how can I rearrange these that would be respectful to Judaism and get the blessing of the rabbis to so that people had something in their hand. That's all. Right? It was no great feat. But nonetheless, that's how great the need is, that such a small thing could fill such a large need. And, you know, but there's more of that that's needed. There was a group of rabbis from Eretz Israel that a while ago, somebody told me about this, that had approached J. David Davis and perhaps Jack Saunders, who's another Baptist minister that converted his congregation to B'nai Noach. Well, those who would stay stayed, and those some of them left. Had approached him and said, listen, if you can raise enough money, we can, you know, put some students to work creating, a tradition, basically, of B'nai Noach, law books, ceremonies. But, you know, they needed $40,000 a year U.S., right? Well, if you're pulling from the larger Jewish community, $40,000 a year, you could probably come up with, right, in a certain amount of time. When you're talking a few hundred B'nai Noach, that's a serious monetary commitment every year from a very small number of people. So, you know, that obviously fell by the wayside. But that is definitely needed. I think that Jews in particular need to, as you know, Rabbi Amen had said it earlier, you know, to really reach out. Because as you can see, the people here are changed not because necessarily, you know, we were reading through our books and said, hey, you know what, this doesn't make sense, let me go find. There might be those out there like that. But the vast majority of people is because they meet somebody along the way who changes the way they think, who says, you know what, this is why that isn't, in a very tactful way, typically. I mean, you can't beat somebody over the head. And the individual says, wow, that makes sense. That is so much more closer to what I believe than... Yeah, I'll tell you a very funny story. When I was going to convert, prior to becoming a B'nai Noach, of course, my parents were very, very upset. Right? And my father, as I said, barely spoke to me in 2.5 years. And, you know, I said, I'm going to reason with them. I said, Dad, you know, what I'm doing really isn't all that against what you've taught me. And he's like, what are you talking about? Right? He goes, you're a Roman Catholic. You went to a Roman Catholic school your whole life. You know, what do you mean? I taught you these things. I said, well, when I was small, I used to ask you, is the virgin birth real? You said, where's the gynecology report? You know, I agree. You know, like, you know, how could it be real? You said it to me. You put that seed in my mind. Right? You know, when I said, you know, is it true that only Catholics go to heaven? You said, I'm sure, you know, if Jews are good people, because I asked specifically about Jews, I'm sure if Jews are good people, they go to heaven too. I said, well, this is what you taught me. It's not what's in Christianity. It's what you told me. But he didn't buy it. So he was still quite upset. And you know, you can't, so you have to, as Jews, when you meet Christians who question, especially if they question, rather than saying, you know what, there's nothing wrong with what you believe, so you know what, I don't know what your personal circumstance is, but there's a way for you other than Christianity if you're questioning it. And those are the seven laws of Noach. And if you want to learn more about it, you can search the internet. If you Google the seven laws of Noach or B'nai Noach, you will come across many different websites. Some may be kosher, some may not be kosher. Some, you know, it's a beginning of a movement, right? There's going to be problems, and there is problems. There's already splinter groups that have developed. But nonetheless, it's something that is out there. It's one of the things that Christians come across. I apologize if I'm going on. I'll try to end it very shortly. One of the things that Christians come across when they see that is that there is some sort of disagreement between different avenues of Judaism about what B'nai Noach can and cannot do. And that's why it's vitally important, I think, that a majority of rabbis come out and in some way, shape, or form say, these things are okay to do, these things are not okay to do, and if certain rabbis or certain individuals say, you know, that cannot be, or it has to be this theory. I mean, I was recently a debate on the internet about whether a Bnei Noach even merits a place in the world to come, as except for being as a garment to the Jewish nation. It was a very big thing. Emails went around. You know, think about a Christian coming across seeing that, right? You know, he's questioning as it is. He reads that, he's saying, okay, I'll go back home, right? You know, that those certain topics should be, you know, I'm not even going to get into the theoretical concepts, whether they're valid or not. It's irrelevant, right? It should be, here is something that you can replace for your life, right? And, you know, we need a prayer book. We need schools that are based in Torah. And we need a house of worship. If those things don't happen in the next 30 years, I can't see the movement really surviving, to be honest.
I'm not sure. Well, start off with just a comment. I guess this is a view in a way. It's like, I don't think that people necessarily hold on to a religion necessarily because it's the most logical thing. A lot of times people hold on to kind of a faith system. They're comfortable. They grew up with these songs or these hymns. It's what they feel comfortable with. And in that respect, one of the things I wanted to ask Effie was this. I mean, you coming out of the Greek Orthodox community, I imagine Greek was likely your first language.
See, if it was all Greek to me, I'd know Hebrew. People, you know, I'd be in classes in Israel when I was in school there, and every once in a while there'd be someone saying, you know, it's all Greek to me, and I'd say, you know, I wish it was all Greek. Then I'd understand what's going on, you know. Sorry.
Well, no, it's all right. I think part of the struggle, I'm going through conversion myself, and part of the struggle, I mean, there's this huge hurdle to try to understand the language, but there also there's, I mean, aside from the practice, there's also like a cultural piece to it, and that cultural piece is something that's it's inherent in language, and it's inherent in practice, and it's inherent in I mean, the relationships and everything like that, and that in itself is kind of a struggle. And one of the things about the different elements of Christianity, and I have the same impression that Judaism has that those same kinds of flavors to them. I would call, those various kinds of expressions, whether some might see them as charismatic or more expressive, and others are more very sort of laid back well, this hopefully I will not insult anyone by saying this, but I would say that the Amish and to a certain extent Lubavitch, if you take a look at the way that people are dressed, they're pretty close. They're from a certain period of time, and so what I was curious to the point to the one question I'm trying to get to is this: how did you, or how are you finding crossing this cultural bridge?
I think it's a little unfair, actually, for... I think I'm actually in a very great position. I mean, you know, I'm Greek. Everything I, you know, was taught Greek. It's similar to a movie called My Big Fat Greek Wedding. It really is like that. I mean, I go into a Jewish home, and it's kind of like I'm at home. You know, same kind of movement in the hand and the this... So for me, it's just because of my Greek background. If I was English, the question would make... I'm serious. I hate to be, you know, I'm not trying to offend anyone, but if I was English, yes, certainly it would make a huge difference. To answer your question so that it's fair, I understand what you're asking, though, because, you know, someone who's English or Irish or, you know, if even those people that are English or Irish come into a Greek home, they're just like, what's going on here? We're just talking to each other. That's just the way we are. I mean, for me, it's such an easy transition. Hmm. It's been very... I haven't even felt a bump in the road. That's how easy. When I was in Israel, even, people were like, are you Israeli? Just because of my whole, like, you know, this and my, you know, my expression. And anyway, for anyone who knows me, I'm, you know, quite vocal when I want to be, you know. I'm actually not the right person to ask that. I mean, I think Italian, it's the same idea. So anyone Southern European, you know, it's sort of Middle Eastern, Southern European. So everyone's sort of kind of that the same type of disposition. Northern European, that's a whole other kettle of fish, in my opinion. So, I don't know how to answer your question, but I do know what you're talking about. I do,
okay.
And exactly. I've met a lot of people who have converted who really just are become just so overwhelmed in the whole, you know, environment. They just can't really handle, because they're just so used to everything, like, you know, in order and everything working in a specific way, very, you know, very like the Northern
European
countries.
You're saying Judaism,
you know?
Isn't orderly?
I'm saying there's chaos.
Get you
there's
in
chaos
here.
That exists, culturally speaking,
okay.
In that environment. So I don't know if I have answered your question, but
okay, thank
I
you.
Do know what you're talking about.
I just wanted to ask one more quick question, and that is, I had the sense that you dodged the bullet, John, and I was curious. Do you observe Shabbat?
Yes, but not to the extent that somebody Jewish.
Okay. So, would you go to? Do you go to a shul or a place of worship? And what do you do in your holidays? I'm just curious.
Well, as I said, there's copies of Beninu Quarterly in the hallway. You can certainly pick up those copies. I can't go through all of them right now. I can email you if you want to email me. I can email you different things. But, you know, the holidays basically consist of certain prayers that we can say on specific holidays, certain ceremonies that we can, you know, do. Like in Shabbat, we sit down, we have a prayer before we start eating. We say a Kiddush. We have a nice meal. I wish I could have more people over, but there's only a couple of Bnei Noach in the city, and they don't want to come to my house every Friday. But, you know, and... you know, and then afterwards we, yeah, there you go. And then afterwards we have a you know, an after meal prayer. And there's actually certain prayers that can be said before and after time every time we eat that are in the quarterly as well. As well, there's, you know, for Hanukkah there's a ceremony that you know, you can go through, which is very similar to the one that Jews would do in terms of remembering you know, the miracles that Hashem had performed, because of those miracles at the time of Hanukkah. Of course, if the Jews were not successful, if the Maccabees were not successful, there would be no Jewish people today, and I wouldn't be able to sit here as a Bnei Noach and talk about how you should help us to...
Okay, so I guess my question would be then is, how would you differentiate yourself, aside from the fact that you came from a Goy background?
From a convert? Yeah, that's fine.
Not as an insult, but from, say, elements of Reform Judaism.
Well, because if somebody was a Reformed Jew and they came to me, I'd say, you know, you really should become Orthodox. Right? And that would be the first
okay.
thing.
Okay. Thank you very much.